Welcome to EA Coedding's Esoteric Excursus. I'm EA Coedding, and I am an author of books on practical spirituality. And what I mean by practical spirituality is spirituality that you can actually apply in your life, in the world, to make substantial change in the world and in your life and in your circumstances. That spirituality ought not be this thing that that's passive, that we can tap into and reach states of ecstasy or fulfillment or enjoyment and peace. Sure, that's all part of the whole spiritual trip, but that's not really what I'm interested in as much as being able to take the whole principle of spirituality and the practices within various spiritual paradigms and apply them in our lives and make substantial changes in our world around us. So to kind of give you an introduction of myself for those who are not familiar with me or my works, I've been interested in spirituality just about my entire life, and even specifically in the occult most of my life, where when I was a child I was making up incantations and reciting incantations as a child, and at 8 years old I was trying to levitate my Lego blocks and levitate my toys. I had my toys spread out and I was focusing with my hand outstretched to see if I could get them to rise up off of the ground. Obviously I wasn't able to at that point. I wasn't aware of the law of reversed effort and the various subtle energies and impacts in the environment I would have to manipulate in order to get those blocks to rise, but that was always a driving force. I always had this obsession with the occult. Around the time I was 12 years old, like a lot of 12-year-olds, I had a teenage or preteen stepbrother who introduced me to Ouija boards, and the Ouija boards are hokey and all that, but at 12 years old it was extremely sinister gateway into the spiritual. So my stepbrother Jeremy and his cousin both brought this homemade Ouija board in and were playing it. They had their hands on the planchet, and it was those two and I believe my two sisters, one a year older and the other a year younger than me, had their hands on this planchet, and the planchet made a figure eight around the Ouija board. Now at this point I was sitting in a recliner watching this whole thing. I didn't want to get involved in it. I was I wouldn't say staunchly Christian at that point. I mean, I'm 12. How staunch can you be at 12 years old? But I kind of had a feeling that this was something you shouldn't be tampering with. Well, the planchet made this figure eight for a while, and they asked it questions, and it just kept going, sliding to the far right of the board. And so they'd ask it a question again, and it would slide to the far right. And then we all started noticing, that it wasn't just sliding to the far right of the board, but it was sliding pointing towards me. So finally they convinced me that I should put my hands on this planchet and maybe the spirit would talk to them then. So I did. I touched the planchet, and as soon as I touched it, full communication started with this spirit or energy or intelligence or whatever it was, our imaginations, whatever it may have been that speaks through an Ouija board. You know, now with enough research, I know that it's ideometer motions, it's ideometer effect, where the subconscious mind causes tremors in the hand that causes the planchet to move. I understand all that, but there are also subtle things that are going on within the subconscious mind. That's not quite a full write-off as far as I'm concerned. Just saying, oh, that's the subconscious mind, forget it. Well, there's a lot coming through the subconscious mind. We don't really understand consciousness the way that I think we would like to, and that science pretends to. It's still something we're tinkering with. So Anyways, I touch this planchet, and we have a full conversation with this thing, and it tells us stories about itself, and it's as if it were the spirit of a dead boy. I could feel more than the simple words on that this thing was spelling out. I could feel a presence there, and it wasn't a presence that was in the board, but it was a presence that seemed as if it were behind me, to the right, as if it were glancing over my right shoulder. And I felt that presence a lot come and go through my early adolescence, and it spooked me badly, where I would feel this thing just kind of blip into my existence, and I could really sense it there. On some occasions, I could see it, especially at night, when my brainwave state was headed towards delta sleep, but lingered in the theta brainwaves for just long enough. I could look up, and I saw this thing actually in the top corner of my room, just hovering there in a corner watching. Really disconcerting for a 12-year-old. And I moved up to Washington State with my adoptive father, and he and my mother had separated, and he and my adoptive mother had separated, divorced, and he moved up there with his new wife, and I opted to live with him. And so it was from St. George, Utah, from southern Utah to Washington State, little town Squim, just right outside of Port Angeles. Beautiful, beautiful place. And as I got kind of familiar with the people there, there were a few kids in the neighborhood that were interested in these Ouija boards too. And well, I considered myself an expert at that point, or at least I passed myself off as being an expert to these kids, where I made our first Ouija board that we would use, and had some spooky experiences of talking to the spirits and whatnot. But it seemed to me that there was a gateway that was opened there, not just a spiritual gateway, and the you get into kind of some spooky stuff of the doorways were opened into the spiritual for me. I think that's always been the case. Doorways have always been opened into the spiritual for me, but some kind of portal was opened in my mind where I realized that I could take this ephemeral thing of spirituality and give it a form, in the form of witchcraft, of the occult, of the forbidden. Surely the bishop of the Mormon church that I attended when I was a child wouldn't approve of that. Surely our parents wouldn't approve of Ouija boards. And so that kind of led me down the rabbit hole. And the gate was opened to the rabbit hole, and as I went down it, I found a whole world of witchcraft and demonology. And at the time, I was very, very active in the Mormon Church. Not only was I an active member of the congregation, but I was the youth president. So I was kind of a leader among the youths in the church. I was the senior patrol leader in our Boy Scouts troop. I was Mr. Mormon. I was the kid that the other parents looked up at and said, "Wow, why can't you be like that, Joey?" But I, at the same time, I would sneak away and study witchcraft and demonology, and really try to wrap my head around that. And that was for several years. I didn't really practice anything until I was about 15 years old, and had an opportunity to start putting some of these things into practice, where it became not something that the witches did hundreds of years ago or thousands of years ago even, but something that you could do and that I could do and that I could apply in my life now. And so my whole journey really took off right then when I was 15 years old, and I started calling out to these powers. And at first it was basic candle magic and really based on Gardnerianism and Wicca, where I'm calling on the elements of fire, water, earth, and air, and the cardinal directions of north, east, south, and west, and the guardians of the watchtowers, and I'm calling on these things, and then saying my basically prayer over the candle, and then blowing the candle out, and then I'd have miraculous things happen. And that was really, kind of a staggering step for me. That was another step in my descent or ascent, depending on how you want to see it, was that I saw for myself at that age that I could do these actions, these symbolic actions, and have a physical manifestation of something in my life, where, you know, if I wanted a girl in my school to like me or to pay more attention to me, I would do this candle magic spell, and then the next day she would come and ask for my phone number, or come and sit next to me, change seats, she could sit next to me, and then flirt with me all class. Or if I needed money, it would appear. Or at one point, you know, failing a class, didn't even show up to this class, and my final grade was a B. I have no idea how that managed to work out. But I saw at first, of obviously, wrote it off as coincidence, that it was too silly to be true, that this witchcraft stuff was fun, but really it couldn't have an effect in the world. That's ridiculous. Then after about probably 10, 15, 20 times of seeing that I perform a ritual, and then very shortly after, I receive exactly what I've asked for, if not more. It all kind of solidified for me that, wow, maybe I'm actually tapping into something that's real here. So my journey really deepened at that point, where once I had realized that this wasn't something trivial, that this was something realistic, something that I could really tap into, the floodgates opened, really, where I started looking into other forms of magic rather than just lighting candles. That brought me into sigil magic, into evocation, astral projection, curses, baneful magic, demonism, Enochian magic, Abramelin magic, Abramelin squares, talismanic and amulet rituals, invocations, channeling, the whole thing was just burst wide open, and so I started chasing after it all, and now here I am, and this is 15, 16 years after actually beginning on that journey of practical application, that I can look at my entire life since then and see how I've used this to not only better my life and make things work out more smoothly for me, but where I've actually transformed my entire life, or my entire life has been transformed by this. And so I look at this and I'm looking at the books that I've written, just the books that I've written. I've written 8 books. I've had 6 published. The 7th is going to be out here in October, on October 31st, 2011, where, the first being, I'll just go through them real quick, is Kingdoms of Flame, Works of Darkness, Baneful Magic, Evoking Eternity, Spider and the Green Butterfly, Vote on Crossroads of Power, Questing After Visions, Making Conscious Contact, and Ipsissimus is what's going to be coming out here in October. And then after that, in March, we're looking at releasing the Book of Azazel, The Grimoire of the Damned. And I look at all these, and they really summarize, this whole journey of ascent, of progress towards unlimited power, unlimited knowledge, and not just a vain knowledge of, a mystical sense where you can hide in a hut in India for the rest of your life and know that you really know the secrets. No, it's practical application where you know that you can reach into the world and any change that you want to make, you can make. It's exhilarating at the same time terrifying, because you're channeling this power. You're a vehicle, you're a vessel for a power that is omnipotent. You're a vessel for knowledge that is omniscient. So, you know, you as a microcosm are pretty humbled by the meeting of your highest self, which is Sat Nam, which is your true identity, which is eternal, which is limitless. And that is your name, that is my name, that's all of us, we're all limitless. And so the focus of my books and the lectures and seminars that I'll give and the workshops and interviews is to really get this limitlessness across to people. And not that I possess this limitlessness and you don't, therefore you need to listen to me, but that we all have this. We all have the seed of power in us. We all have the seed of godhood. And it's not a small seed either. I believe that our godhood is written into our very genetic code, and that we are unlocking it. We're unlocking it not only as individuals when we engage in practical spirituality, but we're unlocking it as a race, as a species, when we are. The whole world is undergoing this awakening. Where you can look at the last just couple decades and look at the amazing strides that we've had in technology, in science, medicine, and that's all coincided with a boost in spirituality. Not a boost in religion, not in Orthodox religion, not in a dominator patriarchal system of spirituality, but in personal spirituality, in personal revelation, in personal application of the spiritual in our lives. It's humbling to see that, and to know that we're moving towards a peak where as a species we're reaching towards our own godhood, and this is something that we all can and I think need to do. Not just to survive. We're not looking at just surviving nuclear apocalypse at this point. We're kind of beyond, I think, beyond that. Where at this point we're looking to make the next leap, which isn't necessarily interstellar, although that's something that's really cool to think about. But transdimensional, where. You know, we're operating with all of our selves, all of our bodies. We're able to pierce into the world of spirit and bring that power and that knowledge back to the world of flesh and substance. So that's really what I want to get into is the excursus of the esoteric, that you have the hidden things in the world that are in spirituality, that are in concerning magic and alchemy and those things that humans have always sought after, but that seem completely out of reach for the average person. And now that we're in this age of awakening, this knowledge is just bounding out of the woodwork. And so what I want to do with this podcast really is just kind of answer some of those questions of how do I and what does this mean and how do we apply this? These are questions that I come across of people who do read my books and who listen to the interviews that I'll do or attend workshops, that I'll get a lot of the same questions over and over and over again. And so I kind of want to answer some of those and just make this make my experiences accessible.
So hopefully
hopefully you'll be able to take that and run with it and use that in your own experiences. I would like for everybody who reads a book of mine, everybody who listens to interviews that I do or this podcast will exceed me and exceed where I'm at and what I've accomplished. One thing I hear a lot from people is that they're so amazed at where I'm at, and well, where I'm at is where I'm at because of a lot of the experiences that I've had. Obviously, I got asked the other day, how did I have all the experiences, and where did I get all my experience from? Well, that question answers itself. I got my experiences from having the experiences, from getting into it, and so hopefully by sharing these experiences and the knowledge I've gained, you can listen to that and take away from it what you need to just march forward with it and start having your own experiences. This is, I don't want to come at this from an angle of theory and sit here and pontificate and conjecture. I want to put it out there as far as here's what's worked for me, and hopefully you can use that as well. So I got a list of questions from a Michael Fabry on Facebook. I just threw it up on my Facebook page. I am very active on my Facebook page and try to keep in touch with what's going on with my projects, as well as to get input and feedback. And so in doing this podcast, I realized that I'm not good at just free-form speaking, because I'll go on for hours and hours and not really say anything. I'm a flighty, Pisces, artistic-minded person. So to give me some direction, I asked one individual, Michael Fabry, if he could put together some questions. He's just barely starting on his own path and learning evocation specifically and getting into to ritual. And so he has a lot of questions, and rather than just answering his questions just to him, I asked if he could compile them for me, and maybe I could answer some of them on this podcast, because they are questions that a lot of people, I think, will have. So the first question that he asked is what was my personal experience when I performed my first evocation? Or evocations. My first evocations were done out of the book The Necronomicon. Most people now that are into the occult and evocation and demonology and whatnot are familiar with The Necronomicon. The book I would work out of was Simon's edition of The Necronomicon. My friends and I just kind of got together and we were practicing ritual together for quite some time, and I really pushed the group to look at this book, because it promised everything that I was looking for, which was unlimited power through demonic interaction, and so we started practicing out of that, started practicing evocation out of that, calling on the watcher and opening the gates and whatnot. So my first evocations were of calling the watcher, and what would happen, and I followed pretty strictly what was in the Necronomicon as far as the instructions. So I created the circle out of flour, the double circle out of flour, and we had a sword. One of my friends was in this dark circle of ours. He was taking a metalworking class. He made a full length broadsword that we used, and carved the sigil of the watcher on it, and did the whole ritual, and we could all feel something there. We could feel something very strongly there. We went to this plateau. I live in southern Utah, and it's a desert area, so southern Utah and New Mexico and Arizona kind of look very similar, where there's a lot of red sand and red rock and plateaus. So we went up to this plateau and just found a spot that just called to us, and performed the evocations there, We could all feel something there. We could feel something very strongly there, a presence, but it wasn't in a body necessarily. It wasn't like a form standing in front of us. It was just the awareness of this presence. And every time that we would do it, the wind would blow. It would not just a trickle of breeze that can come and go, but a hard, heavy wind. And that was kind of got to be known as a signal to us that this was all, you know, working. And then we'd feel that presence enter, and at the same time the wind would just start, you know, just ghastly wind coming at us out of nowhere from a dead night into that. And we would usually make some kind of I don't want to say command. We would make a command, a request. We would ask for something to happen in our lives, and what I saw is before doing these evocations, I was doing basic candle magic and whatnot, where I would just light a candle and you know, ask the elements of fire, water, earth, and air to bring me what I wanted. And I saw pretty amazing success with that. But then when I started doing these evocations and asking the watcher to do things for me and for us, it was nearly instantaneous and more powerful than anything I could imagine. Where I'd ask for the outrageous things that would just come to me. And obviously, you know, this is when I'm a teenager. I'm in high school, so classes that I never attended, I needed to pass. And so the computer system got wiped out completely, and all the grades were erased, and so everybody started over with nothing positive or negative on their grade. So I ended up in that class with an A. I don't know if, you know, that was just amazing. And then, you know, for girls that were way out of my league to show interest in me, and for, you know, money here and there and things at home. I had a really chaotic home life, so I'd asked for those things and saw he instantly, I mean, as soon as it could be humanly verified, these things were all coming to me. So it was obvious that there was something there. We tinkered with that for quite a bit until we actually did start seeing not a full materialization of the spirit, but a shadow, almost like a silhouette in the night, just outside of the circle, where it was a congealed darkness, like a living shadow that would slowly build itself immediately before us in the I believe the northeastern quarter. And that was really interesting. But I wanted full materialization. I wanted to see the face of a demon. I wanted to summon it up and see it in front of me, not just as a shadow, but I wanted to see its face. I wanted to look into its eyes. And in Evoking Eternity, I talk about that a bit. Where I finally achieved that after I think several years of performing evocations and practicing scrying, I finally did see through a scrying mirror. And what a scrying mirror does is it basically will just focus your vision, your ability to see into the spiritual planes. It just focuses that. And so it wasn't a materialization of a spirit as I would call it, really, but a glimpse into the demon that I was summoning. And it was King Paimon from the Goetia, and it was startling. I'm gazing into the mirror. I see the white smoke. Kind of feel the mirror, and I perform the incantations and conjurations, and something just clicked where instantly I could see him sitting on his throne. He's sitting on his throne, and the throne is alive and it's moving, and he's sitting on it and looking out at me, and the ugly face, almost like a troll or a trollish face is really the only way I could describe it, I think. And So I issue him my task, and it was fulfilled excellently. But it was startling, and it was a breakthrough experience for me. And I think what caused that breakthrough experience for me was the fact that that I was so consumed with the task at hand that I was no longer too concerned about seeing the spirit. I was more concerned about what I was going to have the spirit do for me, what I was going to have the demon do for me. So it was a shift in my intention that really made it come about and really made that click for me. I do think that you do need to be less focused on seeing the spirit and more on the ritual at hand, and it'll kind of it will kind of click with you at some point. And with me, it was after a lot of repetition, but it was that time when my attention went away from being able to see the spirit and more towards, you know, the actual evocation itself. The question that follows that is, what errors did I make at the beginning? And what are the usual mistakes that one can make when performing their first evocation? Well, your first evocation, your first time of doing anything, you're gonna fumble it. You're gonna be excited, you're gonna be nervous, anxious, and all these things are gonna really make you tight and constricted inside. Now, I've performed probably hundreds of evocations at this point, and what I've kind of learned as I look to my first evocations and then back at where I'm at now and what the difference is basically I relax into it a lot more. I'm not worried about it at all. I perform the evocation. I know it's going to happen, and then the spirit materializes in front of me and not in a mirror, but materializes, builds a body, and I'm taken into what I would call the crossroads. That's really essential, is getting into the crossroads, that space between you and the spirit, between the physical and the spiritual. And it just all happens. It just flows, and that's a big part of, you know, what I try to get across, is that you don't have to memorize and get into the intellectual the whole intellectual side of this. You can if you want. It's fun. You'll learn a lot from getting into the intellectual part of it, the mathematics of it. But when you're actually in ritual, you have to know that there's power there. There's power surrounding you, and you can reach your hand into that power, and you can grab it and move it and do what you want with it. That's really the key, is just to experience it. Really get into it and experience it. So the next question, question two, is must one have a clear objective or question when performing the evocation? Yes, you do. For one, it's going to take your mind away from, you know, can I see a spirit? You know, so many people are like, well, I'm going to perform an evocation just to see if it works. Well, it's not going to work if you come at it with that mindset. If you get so obsessed with the end result, the final end result, not the summoning of the spirit, but what you're going to have the spirit do, when summoning the spirit is just a means to an end, I think that really makes a lot of it click for you, where you can actually, that's when you're going to actually start seeing a lot of success. And then secondly, you're not going to call, you're not going to call one of your friends over and say, hey, come over to my house, I've got to talk to you. And then they rush over there and they come through the door and ask you what you want, and nothing, and then tell them to leave. So same thing, the amount of effort that's applied for you to be able to materialize a spirit is intense, and you do want to have some kind of either a goal that you want to have occur in your life, a shift in your reality, or a piece of knowledge that you want to gain. All right, question three, where is the best place to perform the evocation? You know, my living room works really well at this point. I do suggest that you set aside a one room that you can do the evocations in that's completely dedicated to that, an oratory that's specifically dedicated to evocation. For a lot of people, that's not really a possibility, and because of space limitations and financial limitations and whatnot. But I'll just clear out my living room and move my coffee table out of the way and tuck it away, and I've got a 9x9 cloth, 9x9 cloth that I've got the circle of demonic packs drawn on in red paint, and I've got all my implements that I can just toss down there, so that works really well for me. What you're gonna need to be prepared for if you're performing evocations in your house is poltergeist activity, and some people kind of chuckle when I tell them that, but it's true that you're calling some very intense powers, energies, and entities into your home. Once you invite them into your home, you're going to start seeing things move around. You're going to hear footsteps in the hallway. I had a lady caller that was over, and I had left for the day and let her, just let herself out, and she calls me as I'm out and about, and is in a panic because she was hearing whispers. No, she was hearing voices, full-on voices in my house, and I told her, "Oh, don't worry about it. That's just the spirits." And she didn't think that was very funny. And well, I didn't mean it to be funny. It was literally just the spirits that were speaking, and she was hearing what they were saying. And so I said, "Look, just tell them, you're with me, and you'll be and that if they could please just keep it down, that would be great." So she says that, and their full voices turn into whispers. It was kind of a funny thing. She freaked out. She didn't like staying the night over anymore after that, which was okay. That's pretty intense for a lot of people. So you do kind of need to be prepared for that. If you have family living in your house, children and whatnot, you do need to take that into consideration that unless you're performing very intense banishings after your evocations and getting rid of all the energy, you are going to experience a lot of poltergeist activity. Once again, things moving around the house, voices, footsteps, pounding on walls. I'll often have drawers that just disconnect themselves. They come out, disconnect, and fall on the ground on their own. Doors opening and closing on their own. You'll also notice the light in your house becomes dimmer and dimmer, even though you've got all the lights on and the windows open. That it looks extremely dark. These are all cues that you need to kind of go through, clear the energy out. You can do that through consecrated salt water. Some people do sage smudging. If you know somebody who's a Vodun Hungan, they can make you Florida water for that occasion as well. The fourth question is there a specific time of day to perform the evocation? There is. You would really have to do some research into the spirit that you want to summon, and see what their planetary influences are, and align that with their planetary influences as much as possible. I perform my evocations just as needed, really. I don't wait for the specific day. Unless I'm performing a Vodun ritual, that's completely a different thing. But with Western evocation, if I need to speak to a spirit, I'm calling it no matter where I'm at. I mean, there are times that I'll pull over, the side of the road. Since I live in a small kind of rural community, I can kind of just pull over to the side of the road, walk a few paces out into the desert, and draw a circle in the sand, and materialize a spirit right there, if I need to. So, you can do it on the fly. You can do it on the fly for sure. And how do you prepare the location or the place you're going to perform the evocation? In Evoking Eternity, I give a lot of keys on how to prepare the area, which I do say that it's a good idea to prepare an area beforehand. And if you're going to perform an evocation on a specific day in a specific hour, then you want to prepare the ritual space about at least an hour before the ritual. What that's going to do is that's going to build up a lot of anticipation. It's more for your psychological benefit than any real spiritual intrinsic esoteric value. It's more to get your mind into it. If you prepare the space, then you go prepare yourself as far as a lot of people will choose to wear robes or other ritual garments in ritual, and then return to the place at the appointed time, and you'll have everything there, and you'll feel like you're just walking into a sacred space, that you're walking into a literal temple. I'll do that a lot when I do evocations. There's a cave that I'll go to just a little ways, maybe 10 minutes drive from my house. That'll do evocations in, and if I prepare it beforehand, when I enter the cave, there's something psychologically that does for me to have everything set up and ready to go. It does kind of create that idea that you are going into a sacred space. I do want to touch on garments real quick as well. I personally don't do robes, for show, for ceremony, that when I've done group ceremony with a lot of people there, to be kind of flashy. I've worn a priest cassock that I've designed to be sinister or whatever, or black hooded robe. That's all cool and flashy, but it's not really necessary. What I do is I follow Crowley's advice, with naked breast and feet unshod, I follow the wizard way to God. I'll take my shoes and socks off and take my shirt off and perform it in whatever pants I'm wearing. I try to keep them, black jeans or black slacks, so it's not going to be distracting at all. But yeah, I'll just strip my shirt off, take my shoes off, and I'm good to go. I don't think you really need much else. The shoes and the shirt really just kind of gives you a more, I guess, primal connectedness to the earth, to the environment, to the air, to the ritual, the energies. It just puts you in closer communion with those things. Cross-gender applicable, men as well as women, that a naked breast and feet unshod is the way to go, the path to God, so to speak. Some of the basic equipment that you'll need all this equipment, these ritual tools you're going to do away with. After you've performed a good number of evocations, you're gonna find out you don't need the blasting rod anymore, so you can put that away. You don't need the garments, so you put those away. You don't need the wand or the athame or a lot of these other devices, so you'll start putting them away one by one, and you'll find out that you're performing an evocation without a circle or triangle, and you're just meeting the spirit as you would meet another person. But to begin with, you probably do want to have a ritual dagger, so a two-edged dagger, 6 inches in length, black handle, kind of standard, and you're going to use that for drawing the circle in the sand if you're going to be doing it that way. You can also use that for bloodletting if you're going to use a blood sacrifice. A chalice is a good idea. I'll use a chalice, and I'll fill it with wine, or I'll make an elixir of manifestation that is a specific elixir that helps with things manifesting. It's not psychotropic, and I don't ingest it even. It's made out of red wine, Manischewitz, actually, a cheap sugary red wine mixed with moss, rat's blood, and a few other things, my blood, a few components in there that I take that, raise it above my head, and I pull energy with an inhalation. I pull power into it, fill it with power, and then dump it into the triangle, and it provides a perfect base of manifestation without having to burn incense. if you do use a chalice for that, you can do that, or you can fill it with a sanguinary substitute like wine or you know, even water will do. You don't want to get intoxicated, so try to avoid obviously extremely strong beverages. You know, you don't want to fill your chalice with absinthe and be high on Thujone and drunk on 151 rum. By the time the ritual starts, you know, you just want to have the taste of wine in your mouth and the feel of the consecrated fluid running through your system. You're also going to need incense. If you're not going to use a manifestation base like the elixir of manifestation I just referenced, and if you're not going to use a blood sacrifice, then you are going to need incense and lots of it. I recommend copal resin. So copal, C-O-P-A-L, resin. You can get it online. You can get just about anything online now. Or you might be able to find it at a local occult shop if you have a good one. You know, I'm in southern Utah. Lots of Mormons here. Lots of Mormon churches. Not too many occult shops. So I do a lot of my shopping online for that stuff. You're going to use copal incense. You're going to need incense burning discs or coal discs, also called hookah discs, because they'll use them for hookah, for hookahs. I don't know. I don't really do the hookah thing, so I'm not sure about that. I don't even know how that would be used. But you put that charcoal disc in your incense burner. Put a few granules of your copal resin on there, and you're going to light it first, obviously. Light it, let it get red. You're going to light the coal, let it get red. It'll sparkle everywhere as the saltpeter is kind of popping, and it'll turn red. Sprinkle a couple things of coal granules of the copal on it, and it'll start smoking like crazy. And I would keep a steady flow of that going. You want a lot of smoke. I'm not exactly sure of why that is. You know, you've got authors like Constantinos, and I think even Dion Forgeon touched on this, where that helps the spirit build a body. I'm not so sure that that's the case. I think there's some of the link that I have yet to fully uncover that mystery. But the more incense smoke you can get going, the greater materialization you're going to have of the spirit. Let's see, number eight. What are the basic evocations that one can perform? And I think what Michael meant by that is for what tasks? And he gives examples of financial success, love, empowerment, money. Basically, if you can imagine it, you can manifest it. If you can imagine it, you can make it happen. And that's not some silly, you know, after school special. This is if you can hold it in your imagination and you can clearly see what you want, you can use evocation to bring that to you without a doubt. Money is a big one. A lot of people want, most everybody wants money. So that's a really good place to experiment with. Whenever I'm trying a new system of spiritual manifestation, which, you know, I'll come across new systems and I get excited with it. Ooh, here's a new process, a new method I can try. That's one of the first things I do, not because I need money, not because I'm greedy, but because that's a really solid feedback of whether it's worked or not. Okay, I want this money, I want this amount of money, and I need it by this date. And then if it comes, then it's successful. If it doesn't, then, well, I need to fine-tune it a bit more. So that's a really good one to use. You know, love, I try to avoid mixing magic and love together. It doesn't seem to work out well for me. So, you know, some other people might have had better experiences with that, but yeah, if I want love, you know, I'll find it. It'll come to me in other ways. I don't use magic for love. That's always backfired on me massively. So yeah, that's that.
Empowerment, yeah. I mean, any kind of empowerment. You want a better job. You want, you know, some kind of political or religious status or whatever. Yeah, you can get all that. You do have to find the right spirit to summon for that. You do have to have that intention really clear in your head as far as the exact type of empowerment that you might want. But yeah, once again, if you can imagine it, you can bring it to you through evocation. Evocation is, without a doubt, the most powerful occult ritual, the most powerful spiritual discipline you will ever learn. This is the key to unlocking our ability to instantaneously manifest. This is the key to creation. And I can explain that. I will explain that as we go forward through this podcast series. But evocation is the key to godhood. You're summoning forth armies of spirits to join you in whatever your endeavors are. You are creating something before you in a tangible form that you can hear it, you can see it, smell it, you know, you can taste the sulfur in the air if you're calling on something extraordinarily chthonic. You can smell it. All of your senses, you can touch it. There have been times I've reached out and touched a spirit's hand, and could feel it. You can feel with your sense of touch. You can feel the temperature shift in the room. Often you can feel raindrops falling from the ceiling that nobody else can see, but everybody can feel. There's no verifiable way to see that that's there, but everybody's feeling water falling on them from nowhere. These are all phenomena that happen in evocations and directly after evocations. But you're taking something that's not really verifiable. Real, the spirit didn't exist, the phenomenon did not exist until you called it into being. The evocation is the key to godhood. So how to act when the spirit presents itself? You know, that's I can see why a lot of people would think that. I mean, you know, how would you want to present yourself to a spirit, and you know, do you want to present yourself as this tough guy, black magician? I'm gonna summon you and you're gonna obey me because I'm evil, or do you want to present yourself as holy or neutral do you want to bow before them, or do you want to make them bow before you? Really, in the process of evocation, and there's another question that Michael asks as well, which is how do you perform the evocation? Well, okay, let me get into that real quick. Where in an evocation, I'll outline how I perform an evocation now, because I've gone through a lot of stages of doing it and kind of have arrived at a very, very effective method, which is I'll lay out the circle. I don't use a triangle anymore. You can use a triangle of manifestation if you wish. I do recommend it at first, and in Invoking Eternity, I give all the details for that. But at this point, I just let the spirit wander where it will. I use the Circle of Demonic Pacts, so I lay that out and sit inside. I light a candle at my left and my right side. I usually face either north or south. Usually south, because I'm usually working with demonic entities, and demonic entities are usually more fiery and infernal than other entities, so the south works out really well for that. But alright, so I'll light candles, like usually black candles, one at either side of me, and then either outside of the circle or within the two concentric circles that form the perimeter of the circle proper, I'll put my incense burner, my censer. I'll lay that there, light the incense coal. Once that gets hot, I'll put the copal incense on there. Once it starts smoking, I'll focus my attention onto the sigil of the spirit and focus intently on that. You want to open the sigil through a gaze. You don't want to stare at the sigil. And you're going to have it drawn. You're going to have it inside the circle with you, or you can have it in the triangle of manifestation in front of you, and you can gaze at it that way. I prefer to have it, you know, in my lap, and I'll usually kneel once again, you know, naked feet and breast unshod. I'll naked breast and feet unshod, rather. I'll be kneeling in the circle. Constantinos, I know in so many spirits suggests that you stand, and that's something that I believe Israel Regardi talked about as well. Several Kabbalistic authors and occultists suggest that you stand. I prefer to kneel or to sit, and I'll get into why in just a second. But I'll connect with the sigil of the spirit, and as I connect with it, I'll get a conjuration, short conjuration. Your conjuration doesn't have to be this lengthy thing. It shouldn't be, actually. You should keep it as concise and simple as possible. You want to commit it to memory, and I believe you also want to be able to repeat it over and over and over and over. So let's say we're going to call Abertala. What you do is you say, Abertala, come. Abertala, come. Abertala, come. And as you do that, you're getting yourself kind of worked into a frenzy. And just as I've said it only three times, I can feel the spirit here, coming closer to me. I'm connecting with it. If I had his sigil, I could materialize Abertala within seconds. That's how intense that name-calling is. And connecting with its sigil, gazing lightly at its sigil while you're chanting this, and you're feeling yourself connect to it. The sigil is going to start to flash. A lot of people see it actually flashing, where the lines disappear from the paper and then reappear, and they're vibrant and they're floating above the paper. And at that point, the spirit is there spiritually, astrally, invisibly though. And so at that point, once the sigil flashes, you're going to pull your eyes up from the sigil into the room around you, where the incense smoke is gathering. Now, I've noticed the incense smoke will indeed gather in one spot of the room, and it's not necessarily right above the censer. Sometimes I'll have it swirl around me. Sometimes it'll just go and gather in one spot. And so you're going to turn your attention to the incense smoke. Now, what's important is that in the sigil charging, the sigil consecration, sigil opening, when it starts to flash, there's a specific physiological and psychological state that you've entered, where your eyes are focused in a very unique way, and your psychology is different, where you're calmer, you're relaxed, you're non-attached, you have this serenity about you. And if you can maintain that serenity and maintain the gaze that you were using while you were looking at the sigil, as you're looking at the smoke, you're going to start seeing things flashing in the smoke. You're going to start seeing lights flashing in the smoke, and you're going to dismiss it as your imagination. Almost every time you will dismiss it as your imagination. Like I said, I've done this evocations hundreds of times, and every time, you know, it's really tempting to just go, that's nothing. If you can pierce through that and go, okay, this is the spirit materializing, and so then you're gonna gaze into the smoke, and you'll start to see those lights flashing, and it'll seem like it's synapses in your brain that are just firing, making your eyes do weird things. Go with it, and look into the smoke, and continue the conjuration. If it's just that two-word conjuration that works, I use a conjuration, alashtar alashtalashtu, that I'll use to call the spirit, but you can just use its name and the word come. So you're going to gaze at the smoke, and you see the lights flashing, and then you're going to repeat that, Abertala come, Abertala come, Abertala come, and it's going to gather and gather, and you're gonna the smoke's gonna coalesce more. Now, what's gonna happen is gonna be amazing, because the spirit is gonna start coming into this world. You can feel it. You can feel it strongly, but at the same time, you're gonna start entering into what's called the rapture, where your your physiological and your psychological states are completely elevated. Not even anything close to human or normal anymore, where you feel like you are about to pass out, you're about to lose consciousness. Do not lose consciousness, but get yourself very close to that edge. What you're doing is you're entering into the theta gamma state, and you're holding that. And as you're holding the theta gamma state, you're triggering you're holding the theta state, you're triggering gamma reflexes, and your brainwave activity is off the charts, and you can barely consciously hold on to yourself, and at that point, the spirit is going to pop into this world, and at the same time, you're going to pop out of this world. So you're going to smack into that spirit, you know, in the crossroads, and at that point, you know, that's when you can really begin the conversation. Now, a lot of this is going to seem like an out-of-body experience. A lot of it's going to seem like you know, one way to describe it is it's going to feel like the whole thing is taking place while you're looking at it from a third person perspective. It's almost like you've left your body and you're watching yourself talk to this spirit now. Or that something else has inhabited you and you're watching it from deep within yourself. It's, you know, it's almost unbelievable where you're going, this isn't happening. But if in the moment you can go, okay, this is happening, there is a spirit here, and, you know, I haven't completely lost it. I mean, just, you probably have lost it. You probably are insane, but go with it. Go with the insanity, just for the moment. Start talking to the spirit. Once you make that connection, once the spirit pops through into this plane and you pop out and you smack into it, then, I mean, start in with your questions. I have a list of questions ready for the spirit. God, if you don't have a list of questions ready for the spirit, if you don't have them written down, ready to go, you're wasting your time, you're wasting the spirit's time, you're wasting my time, because these things can teach you such amazing wisdom and knowledge about all of the secrets and the mysteries of existence. Write down some questions, some good questions that you would ask a spirit. I mean, if you could talk to somebody that's all-knowing, that's been... that's witnessed creation from the beginning to the end, what would you ask them? Write those questions down, have it ready, and then write questions down about what it is you want to summon that spirit for. So let's say you want money. Okay, well, ask the spirit, how can I get the money? Where can I be? Who can I talk to? Have these specific questions, and then your commands or your requests, have those written down as well. And as soon as you smack into that spirit in the crossroads, start asking the questions. You know, I'm not concerned with having the spirit write its name on a piece of paper to verify that it really is the spirit. That's it works. Yeah, you can get some autographs. That's cool and everything. But what I'm worried about is the practical application of these things. So the spirit's there. You're talking to it. Hardly ever, when you perform an actual full evocation, will any spirit other than that which you have summoned come. I have yet to see an actual spirit come. This is not the one I summoned when I'm doing a full evocation. When I'm just calling out to random spirits, yeah, it's different. When you're doing a full evocation with a sigil and a name and the rapture and all of that, I've not seen that fail. So start asking the spirit questions right away. So how do you engage it? And as the spirit answers, write the answers down immediately. So you're not going to take your eyes off of the spirit. You're gonna learn how to write without looking at what you're writing, and you're gonna have sloppy handwriting from doing that. You're gonna have a hard time reading what you've written later because you're not in a proper state of mind and you're not looking at your pen moving on the paper. But you'll be able to decipher. Don't worry about that. Write it down. And keep this conversation going with the spirit. The biggest part of this is to trust in it all. This is something that's happening. This is a system that you've plugged yourself into. This system, and it's working. Let it work. If you sit there and go, well, now wait a minute, am I really having a conversation with the spirit? Maybe this is all in my imagination. You just fucked yourself. You're gonna have to take some steps back from that to even get yourself back into the ritual. So accept that what is happening is happening, and go with it. You can criticize yourself for being silly or whatever later. That's fine. We all do it. I've literally worked the miraculous. I've brought people off of their deathbeds, and I've sent other people to their deathbeds through magic. I've seen firsthand that this is very real, very usable. That this puts the power of godhood into our hands. But all the time I'm going, maybe it's all silly. And that's common. But when you're in that state of omnipotence, you really can't go there. You can, but then you're gonna set yourself back quite a bit. So accept that it's all happening. Go with the conversation. Criticize yourself later. But in the moment, trust it. Trust in the process because it's working. You know, that's when people want to start criticizing it, is as it's working. You know, that's silliness. If you're having a conversation with your boss about a raise, you know, you're asking him for a raise and he goes, yeah, you know, I'll give you a raise. That, you know, in the middle of that process, people want to go, oh, this can't really be happening. He's not going to give me a raise. Well, that's kind of people's tendency, is to kind of disbelieve the amazing things that happen to them in life, and this is the most amazing thing that will ever happen to you in your life is evocation. And so when you're doing it, accept the amazing part of that, and really just get into it. Give yourself over to it, and then, you know, once it's all said and done, you've gotten all the information you need to get, you've asked the spirit if it'll do what you want, it's agreed to, then you dismiss it. Now, when you dismiss it, you know, don't do the whole, you know, I send you back to the fiery pits of hell in the name of Jesus Christ, be gone, you know, Satan or whatever. You don't want to do that. Thank the spirit for coming. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for attending. Go now into the world. Not back to hell, not to the astral plane. I don't do that. Go now into the world and bring this to pass. You're releasing the spirit into the world. Now, a lot of occultists are going to, you know, disagree with me on that. Oh, you can't just let them loose in the world. Well, yeah, you can. They're already loose in the world, buddy. They're here. They're all around you. If you open up your third eye and you look around, you're going to see that we are surrounded by spirits. We're surrounded by demons. Angels, they're everywhere. And they're already in the world. You don't need to release them into the world. That's just silly. They're already there. So you're basically just putting them to work on your task. So how do you act when the spirit presents itself? At that point, you're going to be so deep into the rapture that you're going to act the only way that you can act, which is you're going to act a bit like a madman. You're going to be stumbling over your words because words just are no longer capable of describing anything that you're experiencing. You're going to be excited and you're not going to be nervous really, because you're going to be so deep into the rapture that you won't really have time for nervousness or anxiety, but excitement and almost a delirium. You're going to have a delirium of ecstasy that's going to be going on. And so you're not really going to be able to compose yourself. If you've got the state of mind to compose yourself and to think about how you're going to present yourself, you're not even close to being deep enough into the rapture to experience a full materialization of the spirit. So the next question, if it didn't present itself, if the spirit doesn't present itself, what did I do wrong? You didn't get yourself deep enough into the rapture. You didn't put yourself deeply enough into the ritual. You were too worried about the intellectual side of it. You were too worried about the what ifs and, oh, what about this and this and this, and am I being silly, and is, you know, you're thinking about all this bullshit that you really don't need, rather than just plunging in and putting yourself full force into it and getting into the theta gamma sink. The theta gamma sink is essential. Getting yourself into that place where through the repetition of the conjuration, through the gazing in the sigil, through the whole ritual process, getting yourself to that point where you can see deep into the spiritual. You know, let's talk about the theta gamma sink real quick. Here's how you can get yourself quickly into the theta gamma sink. Now, I'm sure at some other point in some other podcast or whatever, I'm gonna talk more about specifically the theta gamma sink, but What it is that you've got your brainwave states. You've got a alpha, beta, theta, and delta. Alpha and beta are the brainwave states that we alternate in through life. As we're focusing our mind or just relaxing our mind, it'll go through between beta and alpha. And then as you fall asleep, you go into delta sleep. Now before you hit delta in the stage of hypnagogia, you enter into the theta state, and that's 4.5 hertz is what your brain is outputting. And if you hold that 4.5 hertz, if you hold that theta state, you don't let yourself fall asleep, but you're not completely alert either. And that's the state you'll be in prolonged hypnosis, in prolonged meditation. If you hold that, you can start triggering gamma brainwaves. So gamma is basically off the charts. They used to think that I think it was like 40 to 60 was the highest that your brainwaves could go as far as hertz. And then they started seeing that in enhanced spiritual practices, people are triggering. At first it was 60, and they thought 60 was off the charts, that was nuts, and then they started seeing it was going up to 80, and then 200 hertz. People have gone up to 200 hertz in ritual by triggering the theta gamma sync. So what you're doing is you're not only activating more of your brain on an active level, you've taken your brain and turned it from a double A battery into an electrical line that if you touch it it's gonna fry your veins and boil your blood. So once you trigger that theta gamma sync, that's what's gonna cause your ability to really slip in between the worlds and to experience these things of spirit and to have the spirit come back and influence the things in this physical plane. That's really the key, is the theta gamma sync. Now, how to get yourself there? I learned this actually while I was in church when I was a kid. So you're going to learn two things here. You're going to learn how to get into the theta gamma sync. You're also going to learn how to see auras, because the two were connected for me. In church, I was raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, aka the Mormons. And you sit there for 3 hours. Your sacrament meeting is 1 hour, and then you have different classes that you'll go to for an hour each. So 3 hours of sitting there listening to boring people talk about boring things. And as a kid, I let my eyes wander I would just kind of gaze off into nothing. And what I started doing is I would look at the person who's speaking. And as I look into their eyes, and they would be a good 50 to 100 yards if I was shooting. Not that I was shooting at them, but that's an easy way for me to gauge distance. About 50 to 100 yards. I would look at them and look just square in their eyes. Even if I wasn't necessarily making eye contact, I'm looking at their eyes. And then I would see, all of a sudden, their aura just expand, a light expand from around their skin, and sometimes it would be bright and big, sometimes not so big, and then as I look at it longer and more, it would change color, where at first it would be kind of golden, and then it would start taking on these other colors, and then as I'm connecting with that, I could start feeling the emotion. I could get into this part of me that I could feel what they're feeling, or I could even hear their thoughts as I'm connecting with their aura, and that's cool and fun and all. And all you gotta do is look into somebody's eyes and unfocus your vision. Use the same vision that you're using as you're gazing at the sigil, a light gaze. And when that sigil starts flashing, you're gonna notice it's something that you have to experience in order to get yourself there. You have to be there at least once in order to know how to get back there. But it's the exact same vision as when you see somebody's aura. That it's something extremely unique happens in that moment when you see somebody's aura expand, or when you see the sigil start flashing. And that's the same vision you're gonna use when you're looking at a spirit that's materializing. Without having triggered that vision, you're not going to see anything. You need to learn how to trigger that, and you can do that through looking at people's auras. So unfocus your eyes. You don't want to go cross-eyed. You just want to unfocus, just a light gaze or relaxed gaze, and look them in the eye, and then notice it'll come out of your peripheral vision that you'll see the light expand. As soon as you go to look at the light, boom, it disappears. As soon as you look at the sigil, as it starts flashing, you go, wait a minute, and you refocus your eyes, it disappears. So you're gonna keep your eyes focused on that person's eyes, and then through your peripheral vision, you're gonna start seeing the light expanding. Now, what's really cool with that is you'll get yourself to that point where you're seeing that aura, you're seeing the colors, you're feeling the emotions coming off of that person. All of a sudden, you're going to completely lose equilibrium. You're going to feel like the floor has dropped out from underneath you, and you're floating in space. And it literally feels like your feet are above your head, and that you're turned backwards and inside out. And then you're going to feel like you're falling. You're going to feel a definite falling sensation. And it's not necessarily that your body's falling, but it feels like reality is moving upwards and you're staying in place. And that's why I've called it falling through rings of reality, because you literally are. You're dropping out of three-dimensional space and into, 12-dimensional hyperspace in some cases, or at least multi-dimensional awareness. At that point, when you're falling, you're gonna fall forever. Now, it'll feel like the reality is moving away from you, but you can still see it everywhere around you, and that causes quite a bit of confusion. That causes people most of the time to refocus and recenter themselves in this world. Now, if you don't refocus and you don't recenter yourself, you keep focusing on the person's eyes, you keep focusing on the aura that you're seeing, and you let yourself keep falling, you will be effectively in the theta gamma sink. You are still awake, you're still conscious, you're still focused, but your mind has dropped several levels lower than it normally would be with your eyes open, and at the same time it's triggering these gamma fluxes that are off the charts. You have to get yourself into the theta gamma sink. So get yourself into the theta gamma sink, and then from the theta gamma sink, you're going to enter the rapture. Theta gamma sink will lead to the rapture if you're applying yourself forcefully enough in your devotion. And that's really what it'll be when you're summoning a spirit, when you're soul traveling. You're going to be doing things where it feels like a devotion, where you're repeating a mantra or an incantation or a conjuration over and over and over again, and you're putting yourself, it's going to have the emotional, psychological, and spiritual resonance of a devotion, and you put yourself in that devotion, you'll hit the rapture. You will hit the rapture, and that's when the whole thing is going to come to life. Now, Michael asks, and last but not least, protection, and he capitalized all words of protection, so I guess that's important. How do I identify that the spirit presenting itself is the one that you evoked? If it looks like the one that you evoked, it responds to the name of the one you evoked, then, it most likely is. That's not an issue I've ever had. I mean, ask it its name. If you want to, you can have it sign a piece of paper. If you want to, there's supposedly this occult secret that a spirit can only sign its name and no other. And so you can do that if you want. I've never had that issue. I don't know why people would have that issue, unless they're expecting to have that issue. I think if you go into it expecting that you're going to come into another spirit besides the one you've summoned, you're probably going to have that issue. I never have. And what to do if uninvited spirits attend the evocation. Now, what happens when you summon a spirit is that you're summoning that spirit, and you're also opening the door for a lot of other spirits to come in. To come into the house and into the area, into the temple. You're opening up a gateway, a floodgate, and they are going to flood through. It's hard to call it harassment when you're asking for it, really. When you're literally asking the spirits to come in, and then they start coming in and doing what spirits do, it's hard to call that harassment. That's you're getting what you asked for. So enjoy it is all I can really say. If it gets out of hand, where you're losing control of the ritual, then I'd immediately just ask the spirit, just dismiss the spirits, go, you know, tell them what you want real quick, go do this for me, and then go now into the world and make it so. And and then just, you know, if they don't leave at that point, then you can go through whatever protective measures you want to. If you need to do an exorcism, I would highly, highly, highly suggest that anybody who's working specifically with demonic entities learn exorcism. And not necessarily of the Catholic variety, although you should study the Book of Roman Rituals, or the Roman Book of Rituals, I forget which order those words go in, where you actually learn the Latin exorcism used by the Catholic Church. Don't use it necessarily. You can take some of the prayers and alter them as you wish, but just to learn how that's done and learn different rituals of exorcism and how to get that to work. It will likely come in handy. I know I've performed several exorcisms. I've performed several exorcisms. I don't want to get into the specifics of all that right in this podcast. I do want to kind of wrap this up. But if a spirit's stubborn and sticks around, how to get rid of it? I first ask it to leave, go into the world, and make this so. And if it still hangs out there, then you can kind of start flipping through the exorcisms that you've learned. The banishings you can do, Leo Lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram sometimes works for people. There's a little exorcism from the Necronomicon that worked pretty well. Just and prepare yourself beforehand with all this information if you're working with demons to be able to get rid of them if you need to. It's hardly ever going to come to that. One thing that you do need to be aware of, if they're still hanging around, ask them why they're still hanging around. They'll likely have a very interesting answer for you, and you'll likely learn more than you thought you would in the vocation. If you're not antagonizing these spirits when you call them, there's no reason that they're going to antagonize you. So if you're treating them as a friend and an ally, they're going to treat you as a friend and an ally. And in such, if they hang around after you've asked them to leave, then you need to go, hey, what's up, bud? You know, if I'm throwing a party, and they go, okay, I've got to get to bed, you know, see you, everybody. Everybody leaves except for one guy. He just kind of hangs around and waits for the crowd to dissipate. I'm going to wonder, he probably has something he wants to tell me in private. So maybe take that into consideration. And lastly, when will we notice the results if we perform the rituals correctly? So if you perform an evocation for money, love, whatever, when will you notice the results? I notice the results almost instantly. I'll perform a ritual for money, and I'll have a knock on my door with somebody with a check, or I'll have my phone ring with somebody who is giving me money. I'll have something that happens that brings the money to me almost instantaneously. Sometimes I do have to wait a day or two for what I want, you know, mostly a day. If I don't see it within 24 hours at this point, I don't know that I'm going to see it, and then I got to kind of reevaluate things, but I don't really have that happen. Almost always within a day, I'll receive, if not the fullness of what I've asked for, a good portion of it. So, when will you notice the results if you perform the ritual correctly? As soon as you've released your attachment to receiving the results, first of all, if you perform this whole ritual and you ask the spirit to do something, then you go around going, God, I really need that money. When is he going to bring me the money? You're not going to get the freaking money. It's just not going to happen. As long as you are carrying around the attachment to it, it's not going to happen. Get all of your desire out in the ritual. Whether it's candle magic, poppet magic, or evocation, whatever your ritual is, get all of your desire out. You want to be left with no desire and no attachment by the end of the ritual. And a good rule of thumb is, as soon as you've forgotten that you performed the ritual, you're going to get what you asked for from it. So Because that's when you're going to become non-attached to it. As long as you're worrying about what you're going to get and when it's going to come, you're not going to get it, no matter what kind of ritual you're using. So that's that is kind of the rule there, that as soon as you become completely nonchalant about the whole thing, you're going, okay, well, the spirit that I've called is taking care of it. I don't need to worry about it. And as soon as you get to that point of where it clicks in you that you don't need to worry about it, you stop worrying about it, you're going to find it comes to you. And when you've completely forgotten that you performed the ritual, almost every time, even though I'm receiving what I wanted within 24 hours, I'll receive and go, oh my God, that was the ritual that I performed. Wow, I forgot about that. You do need to have that complete, sincere non-attachment. So that kind of finishes up this podcast, blog or whatever this is, dealing with evocation and some of those questions. Feel free to hit me up on Facebook if you want me to expound on anything. If you have ideas of what you'd like to do, go ahead and just send me a private message on Facebook. I'm EEA Coetting, capital E, capital A, next word Coetting, Koettitting. I'm really looking at having some fun with this whole IO blog thing and interacting and answering as many questions as possible. So this is Esoteric Excursus, EA Coetting. I am out.